You're listening to the Buckeye Visualist Podcast Show.
Welcome to the inaugural episode of the Buckeye Visualist, a brand new podcast for members of the Ohio News Photographers Association, which supports Ohio's pro and student visual storytellers. I am your host, Lori King, and I thank you for tuning in. We are very fortunate to have not one, but two ONPA leaders joining me via Zoom for season one, episode one of the Buckeye Visualist. Most of you are probably familiar with award-winning Columbus Dispatch photojournalist Josh Bickel, but you might not know that his life is about to change in a big way. Breaking news, everybody. He's not only handing over the ONPA presidential title to Andrew Dolph this spring, but he's also leaving the Columbus Dispatch sometime in May or June. He's heading south, but I'm happy to report that he'll remain a Buckeye. Josh will tell us all about that move in a few moments. Taking over the ONPA presidential reins is Andrew Dolph, a staff photographer with the Times Reporter in New Philadelphia. His winding journey from photojournalism to cook back to photojournalism is quite a story, I assure you, and I cannot wait to hear it. Welcome, gentlemen. I couldn't be more excited to kick off this podcast with the outgoing and the incoming ONPA presidents. We are going to talk about your careers and your involvement with the ONPA, which is about to gear up for another annual contest. Josh, I'll start with you. You've been involved with the ONPA for a long time, but before we get into the heavy stuff, let's start off with a very important question. Are you a Buckeye born and raised?
Well, thanks, Lori, for having me on today. The answer is no, I am not a born and raised Buckeye. My two daughters are, so I got that going for me. But no, I'm actually from Wichita, Kansas. I was born out there and I went to school out there. And then I did my graduate degree at the University of Missouri and then met a woman who I married. And then she got a job in Wyoming, which I followed her out there for. And then she got a job out in Columbus, which I packed up my stuff and moved out here in 2012. So that's how I ended up here. It was not ever in the cards for me to be in Ohio, but I'll be honest with you, I couldn't be happier that we ended up here and decided to kind of sit down and make some roots. Breaking news, yes, I am leaving the Dispatch. My wife, back in November, took a job as the senior news director for content at the Cincinnati Enquirer. So we will be relocating down there sometime in the spring. We're looking for a house right now. It's a process. And I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do. And I'll be honest with you, you know, when I moved out here in 2012 from Wyoming, I didn't have a job then. I was unemployed for about 6 or 7 months before I finally got a job at This Week. And I'll be honest with you, it was hard. It was really, really hard. I worked at an Apple store. I tried to freelance. I was at home a lot. Cleaning and cooking, but I'm really happy for her, and I'm really excited for our family to be down in Cincinnati and to kind of be a part of that local community of photographers and photojournalists, but also to be still in Ohio and to be a part of, you know, kind of the statewide organization and network that ONPA is, and to, you know, be able to kind of be a part of that community still.
When did you get involved with the ONPA?
I was the chief photographer at This Week News, and one of the other photojournalists there, Chris Parker, was the secretary of ONPA. And so I immediately became a member. I had done some freelance work. I entered the contest in 2013, became a member, and then kind of asked Chris and Jonathan if there was anything I could do in kind of an informal capacity. And around that time, we were setting up our social media accounts. We were setting up our Instagram, setting up our Twitter, trying to get content out for that. So I kind of did that for a little while. And then Chris, unfortunately, was laid off from his job. And because of that, he resigned his position. And so I asked if if Jonathan needed an interim secretary, and so I took that position, and then I started in a, we hadn't done an election in a while, so we did an election. I remember printing out ballots and hand stamping them and sticking them over at Christmas break. I was elected president, and I've been doing that for 4 years. So I've been with the I've been with the OMPA since I've been in Ohio. And I think that it's important that, you know, if you are in a position to give back to your community, that you should do that. And I think that that's kind of why I decided to do the things in the organization that I did, because I felt like it was, I don't want to say my duty, but I felt like it was something that I had time to do. And I'm very grateful for all the people that I've met and the things that I've done and kind of the things that I've learned, especially about just how much work it is to put on an annual contest. It is a lot of work. How to do that during a pandemic. The last 2 years, I will be very direct and honest with you. It was a challenge. In 2020, we had this whole thing mapped out. We had a venue, we had hotels, we had judges coming in, and then we had to scrap all that in the course of like 2 days and kind of repivot and figure out how we were going to do this. And we were learning on the fly, to be honest with you. But we got it done with the help of our contest chairman, Adam Cairns and Kyle Robertson. We were able to pull off that contest virtually. And then last year, same thing. Things started kind of to calm down, but they weren't quite where we wanted to be. So we decided to do it virtually again. And it feels like hopefully we're finally going to get out of this and it starts coming back again. So COVID is a thing that has really, I don't want to say hampered us, but it has kind of forced us to rethink how we do things and forced us to kind of not be able to do some of the things that we had wanted to do. As a board, we met before COVID and we had a bunch of ideas about, you know, events throughout the year and things that we could do regionally. And then COVID hit and was just kind of like, we can't do any of that because we can't guarantee the safety of anybody. You know, we're not going to put people at risk unnecessarily. So hopefully we're kind of getting out of this and we can start to get back on track. And I'm really excited for the future.
Yeah. Being a photojournalist through COVID for the past 2 years has definitely been challenging. You know, we put our life on the line, I think more than most people, except for the medical profession, because we can't do our jobs in our homes. We have to go out into the community. I'm sure both of you guys have been, you know, going into COVID test sites and vaccine sites. And I've been in a morgue when they were testing dead people for COVID. And it's been pretty scary. Fortunately, knock on wood, I've been able to avoid getting COVID for 2 years, but I am triple vaxxed.
I think that COVID, just the pandemic in general, I think you're right, Lori. I think that photojournalists, especially, we are out there among people every day that we have never been around before in our lives. There's no potting with what we do. We can't just like get a group of people and only hang around them. And it was scary. The first months, it was traumatic and scary. Just simply wondering if I was going to go outside and catch it and bring it back into my house and something terrible would happen. You know, like it was mentally and physically exhausting for those first like 3 or 4 months. And I feel like a lot of photographers, well, not a lot of photographers, every photojournalist that was working during that time feels that. You know, you didn't have to be somebody who went to who covers war or covers, you know, all kinds of heavy issues all the time to feel that kind of trauma. And I think that we're only now starting to kind of understand how that's manifesting itself within us. Everybody I've talked to is just tired. I think we are all tired. And I think that's a reason why
organizations like this are important because we have to have that network and of each other. We have to have that network of each other. And I think that if anything good came out of it, if anything good came out of the pandemic, it was that we realized that like, it's okay to slow down and just find time to be with your people and find time to be around the people that you want to be around.
Totally agree. Andrew, what's your take on shooting the past couple years? How's it affected you?
It's complicated like many other things. Before re-entering photojournalism professionally, full-time in a staff position, I was with Life Touch doing school photography for just over 4 years. We went through our period of official shutdown because of the pandemic itself, like many other businesses. And then kind of slowly reemerged back into normal business cycles, even though the pandemic was and continues to rage on, with this kind of underlying fear that Josh had expressed previously. You know, am I going to get this? Am I going to bring it home? Am I going to transmit it to my family? Are they going to transmit it to other people? It's just, it's nonstop. And so it creates this baseline of stress that in turn, you don't know what the hell to do with, you know? And so with the school photography in particular, we're around kids all the time. And I don't know if either of you have engaged in school photography in any capacity, specifically picture days. At the high school level, you have teenagers around you and they're not the most sensible creatures. Having raised one myself, we have a 22-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a newborn now. You know, when you're shooting these picture days, you've got kids running around, varying degrees of mask usage, non-mask usage, some schools out in the sticks where unfortunately they just don't really believe in it much. It's tough, and it continues on now as I work as a staffer. You know, I'm going and photographing sporting events, much like Josh, and you walk into a high school gymnasium for a basketball game and the gym is completely full of 150 to 300 people and there is nary a mask in sight. We still have to do our job. That's a tough thing to internalize, and I can't speak for anyone else, but personally, I just push on and hope and pray that I don't get it. I too am triple vaxxed, and it's a critically important thing. And I have multiple ways of working safely in terms of relative types of masks. And, you know, you do your best. Come home, wash up, and be thankful that you didn't get it.
I remember one time I was covering a basketball game last year, and this was back when masks were pretty much required, except for the players and like the refs and the coaches.
Yep.
And there was a whole line of parents, and they were all having suckers in their mouths.
Oh, geez.
And I thought, whoa, you guys just don't get it. Because if you were eating, you didn't have to wear a mask. So their way out of wearing a mask was eating suckers.
Right.
And I made a mental note to shoot that because I wanted to shoot that and post it. Mm-hmm. And then I forgot. I got into the game and it's like, I walked out of there going, dang it. I forgot to shoot that because it would have been a wonderful visual element of what we're dealing with.
Very storytelling. And honestly, Lori, if you had a dollar, or I mean, if I had a dollar for every photo that I missed, I wouldn't have to work next year. I could just stay at home and not worry about anything. Just live off my missed picture money. But yeah, I do think that the last 2 years has really made every photojournalist out there recognize that what we do on a daily basis is risky, no matter what you're doing, whether you're covering high school football game or, you know, working in a big city covering big news and things like that. Like, you don't have to be in a conflict zone to have risk now. I think the risk is everywhere. And to be honest, you know, the sentiments and the attitudes of the of some of the public towards photographers isn't great right now. There's a lot of hostility towards what we do, and I think some of us saw a little bit of that last year. I certainly saw it. It's not to, you know, belabor the point here, but today is January 6th that we're recording this. And a year ago, I was at the State House, and, you know, people came up to me and asked me who I was and confronted me and kind of got in my face. And I was a little worried there for a while. But yeah, I think that doing this job, even as a, you know, a photographer in a metro area or in a, you know, a smaller town, there's a little bit of risk there, because people, you are a very visible part of quote unquote the media, and you're very easily targeted and singled out. And I think that that attitude isn't going away. And so I think we have to think about ways to kind of help keep ourselves safe and to kind of give people the tools to know how to get out of situations like that, how to prepare themselves for situations like that. I think we have to really understand that that is the reality that we're operating in today.
I think NPPA has done a pretty good job of putting out some webinars on violent safety and COVID safety. And maybe ONPA can do something like that for our members. I know you know this, Josh, but you probably don't know this, Andrew, that, you know, I've been at the Toledo Blade for 26 years as a photojournalist, and I just retired in August, and I'm only 60.
Yes, I am aware.
Because I have like post-traumatic news disorder, that's what I call it. Huh. You know, we cover a lot of good stuff.
Yep.
You know, but we cover a lot of bad stuff. And, you know, my kids think I'm nuts because of I'm so overly cautious, like smoking detectors and seat belts and masks. And, you know, we photojournalists, we're thick skinned people.
My first experience was close to Josh's hometown, actually. Josh, do you remember Hayes, Kansas?
I am very familiar with Hayes, Kansas. Absolutely. Yeah.
I did my first internship at the Hayes Daily News when it was a really good, solid, rock solid community newspaper. Unfortunately, it's devolved into something far less than that. But in terms of the experience with the trauma that you were referencing, I don't even know where to go with this one, but I think it ties into the stress of the pandemic in terms of bringing our community back together. We've experienced trauma and stress on so many different levels as staffers at all size papers, whether it be, you know, a 5,000 person, 5,000 circulation paper or something much larger like the Dispatch. These traumatic events, they're ubiquitous, and we're called upon to cover these things, whether we like it or not. So in light of what we're going through with the pandemic, you know, we've got the NPPA, it's this awesome national resource, and we've got ONPA, and my goal moving forward is bringing us kind of all back together. It's like, where did everybody go? And it's no one person's fault. There's no fault to be attached here. It's by virtue of the pandemic, mostly.
Andrew, you're absolutely correct. The NPPA is a great national organization. I'm a member. I'm, you know, many people that I know are members. But ONPA is a really strong state organization, and it needs to be stronger. It needs to grow. It needs to serve all photojournalists that are here in the state. And I think for a long time, it wasn't just the pandemic. I think a lot of it was just, there have been so many changes in the journalism and media landscape in Ohio in the last 10 years that I've been here. It's unfathomable. you know, when I started at This Week in 2012, it was owned by the Wolf family, which also owned the Dispatch. And then it was sold to Gatehouse 3 years later. And then it was sold to Gannett after, you know, I went to the Dispatch in 2016. And the company was sold again to Gannett. Or they merged. I'm sorry. Gatehouse and Gannett merged. So it's changed hands a lot. And every time it changes hands, people leave. People get let go. People are expected to keep doing more with way less. And I think that adds to the stress. And I do feel that for myself personally, that just that constant kind of carousel of things are constantly changing every year, whether it's through a sale or a big editor leaving or people getting laid off. You kind of just are in survival mode. Most of the time you're just like, I got to get through this day. I got to get through this month so that I can keep working and do this for as long as I can. And I think that partly has contributed to it. You know, papers like the Dispatch, for example, when I started in 2012, their staff was around 14 and it had, you know, a director of photography. It had a couple picture editors. It had like, you know, a dozen or so photographers, and we're down to 8 now with a picture editor and 7 photographers. That is what, and that's still bigger than pretty much anywhere in the state.
This is where I think OMPA serves as a great tool, platform, organization, whatever you want to call it. Yes, we have the national version, NPPA, but it seems like that one is just so distant. How do you keep people together? How do you maintain the morale at the national level? It's tough because we're so spread out geographically, obviously. Whereas at the state level, I think the organization itself can really serve as this platform to maintain and boost morale in light of what's going on.
That was a big reason why I joined the organization and went and was on the board.
I wanted
to help foster that. And, you know, I think pandemic especially really threw a wrench into a lot of things. And, yep. but I am hopeful, and I know that it will continue to grow. I think that people are now like, I think the curtain has kind of been pulled back and we realize that we have to be here for each other. You know, no one else is going to be here for us. So we have to do it ourselves. And I think that even small things like sending out that newsletter that I did on a whim a couple of days ago to everybody, I had people email me being like, thank you so much for doing this. It's really great to hear from everybody and to see kind of what's going on. Just something, and even this podcast is a way that people can kind of hear our voice and hear members' voices and feel connected. We don't always have to be, you know, in a darkened classroom looking at pictures at Ohio University or Ohio State or wherever one time during the year to feel connected to each other. And I think that that these types of little things really matter. And so, you know, my hope is to I started it. I hope it keeps going. But again, I'm here, you know, like I'm not going anywhere. I'm still in Ohio. I'm still going to be around. And even though I'm not a member of the board, or I won't be, it's still my job to help foster that community. That's everybody's responsibility, I think.
We are very happy that you took the reins for as long as you did. Andrew.
I was going to tie back into what Josh was talking about. In terms of the feeling of civic responsibility, I remember picking up my first news photographer magazine probably early to mid 90s. I was in high school and very much involved in journalism. We had a strong, flourishing journalism program. I was the member of a over the summer, I'm really searching my memory now, 95, 96, it was tied into the San Jose Mercury News in San Jose, California, where I grew up. And the backing editor was probably Sue Morrow. And there were a group of journalists and a couple of photojournalists that helped put together a summer-long course where we created our own student newspaper as working high schoolers. And we were all given specific stories and went out and put together this amazing piece of work. It was incredible. In any case, I remember News Photographer magazine then, and then when I got into college much later, let's see, that would have been between 2002 and 2006 at RIT, I was the secretary at RIT NPPA. So that was my first formal experience with an incarnation of the NPPA program. And then, let's see, I'm kind of still searching my memory. 2006 through 2009 at the Medina Gazette. I think that was my first experience with ONPA. Yeah, that sounds about right. So I've seen it kind of evolve through different facets or different versions of the national model. And I've seen the work that the current board and Josh has done. And I think it's so critically important to help rejuvenate our community, bring everyone kind of back together, find out where people are, and just reinstill the belief and feeling that, hey, we're really here for each other. And I think that's what's critically important. Another component of that is bringing the retirees back into the fold. The experiential knowledge is just so critically important. I feel like as the industry has gone through these unfortunate periods of layoffs, firings, and transitions, we've lost so much experiential knowledge. It would be really great to bring retirees back into the fold to help them kind of bolster this community approach to rebuilding our community.
Well, now that you're going to be the incoming president in the spring, is retirees is one idea, but do you find yourself waking up at 3 a.m. with like crazy ideas and hopes and dreams and even fears, knowing you're about to take over as the top dog of ONPA?
No, not at all.
Well, there's...
I would be.
Well, you will, don't worry.
You will.
Yeah. I try to get as much sleep as I can. It's Josh understands this too with a new family. If I'm waking up in the middle of the night, it's for different reasons.
Don't sleep much. And I think that's part of it. I think that ideas are excellent. I had a lot of ideas and I didn't execute on many of them, and that's okay. But I do think that if you surround yourself with good people and a good board and want to do things and aren't hampered by pandemics, not that that's excuse, but that's it sucked, I'm not gonna lie. Good things can happen, but I do think that there are small tangible things that can be done to kind of grow that base. And like Andrew was saying, I think that bringing back in life members and people who have been out of kind of the professional setting for a while is critically important. They do have so much knowledge, and we have to kind of use that and, you know, let me back up here for a second because I had a thought and I want to make sure I phrase it correctly. We wouldn't be here without the life members. You know, they were doing this work before many of us were born. And we wouldn't be here without them. This wouldn't be an organization without them. And I think it's important that we find a way to bring them in and kind of give them the space that they have earned. And I don't know what that would look like. I'm sure there are many ways we could do that. But I do think that having the more experienced members and kind of the mid-career and the newer and the student members, having some way to share that knowledge would be hugely beneficial and would only strengthen those bonds of community of being a photojournalist.
Yeah, I think the mentor program is going to be pretty important when it comes to that.
I think of people like Eric Albrecht, for instance, which who was one of your colleagues, Josh, and he got his start at the Times Reporter, where I'm working. You know, so people like that can potentially come back in for portfolio reviews during our annual conference, for instance, without having to call in big names from out of state. That's one potential. He can also serve as, you know, a name on a potential database of retirees that are available for students should they have questions. You know, hey, here's a list of people who are retirees that have this wealth of knowledge and experience, and you can email them or call upon them if you need some assistance. Doesn't have to be any big lofty radical ideas about transforming the organization itself. It's just a simple database, for instance.
So contest season's coming up.
Dun, dun, dun.
Gosh, it's
this double-edged sword.
It is.
Do you do contests, or do you just not do them at all? And if you do contests, gosh, which ones? We all know that there are a ton.
Josh, you won 2 National Headliner Awards, was named a finalist in Pictures of the Year International's Local Photographer of the Year category, both in 2021. You're also a 2-time ONPA POI winner and the first photojournalist to earn that association's POI titles in both the small and large markets. Not only are you a winner, but you're also an observer of winners. Can you share with our listeners what you think makes or breaks a still image or a photo story in a contest? I know that's not an easy ask. Give us some tips on how to put together our portfolio.
To back up to your other earlier conversation, I'll answer your question in a second, Lori. Contests are a mixed bag. I think a lot of people get frustrated with contests because they work really hard. And I've been in this boat too. I think you work really hard, you put your heart and soul into this job, you throw it up there on a screen and it gets outed in like half a second. And your whole heart just kind of deflates really quickly. And it's hard. And I know that this probably is not much consolation coming from somebody who has won stuff, but these things, they don't really matter the way that we want to think that they do. I've always entered contests, and I do enter contests. I've entered World Press, I've entered POI, I've entered MPPA, I've entered ONPA. I do those things because it's a good exercise to go through and see what I've done through the year and to really kind of drill down and figure out what I did that worked, what I did that didn't work, and then how did I kind of like cohesively tell the story of my year. And if it wins, great. If it doesn't, it's like, who cares? And I think everybody should do that. I think every photojournalist should be a very good editor of their own work and be able to kind of look at what they've done and say, yeah, this was good, but I could have done it better. And so for that reason, like, I'm not going to put it in my portfolio. I think you'd have to be a very brutal editor of your work in order to kind of develop those storytelling muscles, if that makes sense. You kind of have to be able to look at something and go, that's good, but it's not quite where it needs to be. It could be better. Or conversely, when something happens and you know it's coming together and it's going to be great, your heart starts beating, you're freaking out a little bit, you know this picture is going to be good, and then it all comes together and you're just like, yes, yes. And then you enter that in a contest and maybe it does well and maybe it doesn't. And that, but my point is that making pictures as your profession is really a gift. And you don't need a contest to tell you that you're good at what you do, or that you care about what you do, or that the pictures you make matter. And so I think that should be the approach of those things. And I'll be honest with you. I went to Missouri. I was a graduate student there. I sat in many a darkened room during POY judging and just listened to them talk about why they liked something, why they didn't like something, why the order mattered of what they put it in. And those were extremely, extremely educational experiences for me. Not just for putting portfolio contest portfolios together, but for learning how to craft a visual story and learning how to express verbally why something works and why something doesn't visually. I think that's really hard for some people. I think that people can look at something and say, okay, yeah, that's good, or that's bad, or there's something about that that's off, but they can't quite say why, or they can't quite verbalize that to a photographer or a colleague or an editor as to why something works or why something doesn't. And I think if you're able to do that, you will go far in this industry, because you can explain and defend and critique why something's working, why something's not. And you can give that feedback that's going to help make someone better. You know, if you're an editor, you're going to be able to actually pull the best out of your photojournalist. I'm sorry. If you're an editor, you're going to be able to pull the best work out of a photojournalist. If you're a photojournalist, you can go sit down with an editor, and when they say, I'm not really into this photo or this image, you can say, here's X, Y, Z, Y, and you can bring them to your side. So I do think that's why contests and those discussions are valuable, because you can kind of learn how to do that. As far as putting a portfolio together and things that you need to think about, it's been my experience that, you know, when judges and thing, and when judges look at your portfolio, your story, your images, number one, it has to kind of stick out, because they're looking at stuff for about a second and a half. So they're going to be naturally drawn toward things that visually are different. But you know, when you're putting together a story, you have to think about variety and think about, you know, not just using the same lens or the same angle for everything, because while each image might be perfect and relevant at storytelling, if they all look the same, you're going to lose the viewer. That's just a fact. And so I think that it's important while you're out making pictures to kind of be thinking as an editor. You know, oh, I need, I'm going to get kind of a scene setter of this, but maybe I'll get a little bit closer. And, you know, if I'm in this situation, how can I both, you know, get like good, how can I get both a good medium angle image, and how can I make a tight image? And what that does is it gives you a lot of options when you're sitting down editing on your computer to put the images in the order that works the best and that tells the story the best. And that's something that takes a lot of practice. It takes a lot of practice. And sometimes you think you've done it well and people are like, that's terrible. And then other times you throw it together at the last minute and they're like, this is great. And you're very confused. But I do think that, you know, these types of contests and these types of things are important, because even if you win nothing ever, what you have done is you've sat down at the end of a year, gone through what you've done, and really taken a hard look at where you are as a photojournalist. And I think that in and of itself, if you approach that exercise seriously every year with yourself, over time, you will see improvement and you will get better and you will do the things that you want to do in your career, and you will make the pictures that you know that you're capable of making.
Well said. Andrew, do you have anything to add to that?
I do think that contests are an important component of what we do as visual journalists. Absolutely. It's important to think about who they're for. They don't really go any further beyond our industry as a whole. You know, it doesn't serve any greater good per se. So I think it's important just to be mindful of what we're hoping to achieve in the contest entry process. Josh touched upon most of the points. One of perhaps the most critical ones, especially for up and coming photographers and photojournalists, students in particular, is to not shoot for contests. Do not work that way. Do not operate that way. Do not think that way. That is one of the worst modes of working, because it does an incredible disservice to the people that we are putting our cameras and our lens in front of.
Because you're shooting for others and not yourself.
That's exactly right. Being in the moment and living in the moments that we capture, that's what's important. And then through the reflective, highly nuanced process of gathering the moments that really work and speak to us when we're looking at those images on our computer screen, that's the time to think about contests. And even beyond that point, in terms of my workflow, if I get a few pictures throughout the course of my week that I really like, they go into collections in Lightroom. And then when it comes to contest time, month by month, quarter by quarter, or year by year, then the editing process happens. And what Josh touched upon in terms of the learning process, the process of self-evaluation, that's critically important too. And I will say that in my current role at the Times Reporter, I really don't have anyone to lean upon. So a lot of the time, it's just me. I am the journalist. I am the editor. I am the publisher. You know, working within the Gannett system, you know, getting our images up online. I'm really not looking to get anyone else's advice throughout the course of my daily travels. It's an unfortunate thing. I miss the days of having a full staff and being able to lean upon editors for advice. So I have to do it online or over the phone, or take the time out of someone else's day to say, hey, I have this set of images. I could really, really use another set of eyeballs to help me through this. It's tough.
You know, I teach photojournalism at a couple different universities, Wayne State in Detroit and University of Toledo, and multimedia for teachers at Kent State. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things I want to get back to is judging contests with the students making some of the decisions on the images, because I've done that a couple times and they really came out of that going, wow, they got to see some top of the line stuff from across the state. And I did NPPA, I believe, so it was across the country. But they were able to look, you know, compare pictures, and then they were forced to come up with reasons why they liked it or didn't like it. And I thought it was a really good learning tool.
Do you remember the days of doing this in person with physical prints as opposed to digital?
Yes.
In terms of the judging process?
I do.
I sort of have a yearning to go back to that time. I think we had the, let me back up. The yearning for us to slow down speaks to me, and I'm not sure why. It might be a byproduct of our digital era and moving through life so much faster now.
Yeah, Andrew, I think, I don't know if those days can come back.
No, there's certain aspects of it that I don't wish for anymore. But I think about the judging process where we're so quick to go in, out, yeah, we've all sat true. Through them. It can be an extremely demonstrative process and it can be very deflating. It's such a subjective thing, and it could be to, you know, yeah. I could have had a horrible cup of coffee and it could influence the way that I look at the pictures that are before me as a judge. And gosh, It's just an awful thing to think about.
That's one of the things we talk about as a staff is like, you know, that doesn't, is not a reflection on you per se.
Yeah.
When you lose or even when you win.
Yeah.
Because it's all about the judges for that day.
But and this is why I say judging and entering contests is such a double-edged sword, because I really, at the end of the day, have to think about and consider, well, who the hell is it for and why? And can we achieve these growth processes that we've talked about just prior to this in better ways through workshops such as the Kalish picture editing workshop? Mm-hmm. You know, how do we learn what we do and what's really more beneficial than any other mode of learning? I know these are very abstract thoughts and concepts, but is the judging contest really the appropriate vehicle for learning about ourselves as photographers and how to grow? I'm not sure.
One of the benefits of having it virtual right now is that we can now, anybody can watch it.
Yeah.
Where before you would have to travel to like Kent State, I think is it what OU now?
It's in flux.
It's in flux. Okay. But be able to watch it live. And then, you know, you guys are tweeting now the winners immediately. I pay attention to the Twitter feeds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think one of the biggest advantages to doing it in a virtual or a live stream setting is that anybody can listen into that. And again, judging is a entirely subjective process. I've done it. I've had it done to me. And I think that at the end of the day, and to be honest, if I could go back and talk to 23-year-old me who got a little stressed out about stuff like that, I would just slap him in the face and say, it doesn't matter. Like, calm down, calm down. I think that with a little bit of experience, with a little bit of age, you start to realize that, you know, a judge or a contest is not going to define who you are, and you can't let it. All you can do every day is go out and try to do your best work, and make pictures that you care about, and tell stories that you're passionate about. And if you do those things, people notice. People who have never seen your work before look at it and they can see it in your image. And whether or not that leads to winning a contest or placing or winning an award in something, that's really what matters, is for people to look at it and say, I really feel that you care about what you're doing. And I can see the time that you took and that you put into this and the passion you put into it. Like, that to me, I've only started getting to that point recently where I'm like really pursuing things that I really care about and that I want to spend time doing. And it reflects in the pictures that I make. And I don't need, and again, maybe it's because I'm a little bit older now and I would tell 24-year-old me to just shut up. but I don't need to win a contest to feel validated in what I do anymore.
You know, 2 years ago when the Blade was like, we're asking photographers to volunteer to learn how to fly a drone.
Mm-hmm.
There's only two of us that wanted to do it. And even though I was 58 at the time, I'm like, count me in. I want to learn something new. So I think the next generation of storytelling is going to be pretty exciting with drone photography, 360, other ways of telling stories, videos. You can't even be a photojournalist without shooting video now. But yeah, a lot of good changes on the horizon, and we're going to be covering all of those in future podcasts. So stay tuned, everybody. Is there anything else you two want to add before we conclude our first episode of the Buckeye Visualist?
I'll let you go first, Andrew.
Geez, I could probably sit here and chat all day long. I've got nothing else to wrap up the context of our conversation today. No. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you very much for taking over ONPA and coming back into photojournalism. I know you did a full circle with being a photojournalist, then being a cook and all kinds of other different jobs, and then coming back. Thank you.
Yeah, it didn't go away. It was in the background for a little while.
You are what you are.
Yeah. I still maintained with freelance work, and so yeah, here we are. I'm happy to be back.
Can't wait to see what you do with ONPA. What about you, Josh? Thank
you. It's funny because when you are undergoing major life changes, as I am right now, you start to reflect on where you're going and where you've been and how you got there. And I will say that, you know, I'm very grateful for the opportunity that I've been given, not just with ONPA, but in this profession. You know, I came here to Ohio 10 years ago and I had no network. I had no support system. I just kind of showed up and worked and was very lucky to be given the chance to keep making pictures. And it's an opportunity and a gift that I have been mindful of every day. And I hope that I'm still able to keep doing it even after I move down to Cincinnati with our family. I hope everybody out there knows that, like, being able to do this job is a gift and a big responsibility, and just make pictures that you care about and know that any day you get to go out and do this is a good day, no matter how crappy it is, no matter what bad thing you have to cover, you're still going out and making pictures. And there are lots of other people out there that would love to be doing what we do right now.
Oh, that is for sure. Like you said, it's a gift and it's not even a job, and you get paid for doing something that is fun.
Yeah.
Well, fun most of the time. It's not fun some of the time.
And I think
when you're shooting a soccer game and it's 30 degrees and it's sleeting, that's not fun.
I mean, but it's still a great story, Lori. It's still a great story.
Like, covered under a big black trash bag.
Yeah. We've all been there. We know. And we wear those badges proudly. Like,
oh, yeah, we do.
My stories at dinner are way better than anybody else's. I'm sorry. Like, it just is. We, no matter what anybody says, our job is the best because we get to out and do stuff every day. And you think of the things that you see every day. And I think of the things that I've seen and the places I've gone and the people I've met. And I'm just like, there is no way on earth I would have ever been able to do this if not for this job. My world is so much bigger because I've been able to do this for as long as I have. And once you kind of understand that, you really have a deep appreciation for what we do, and you want to help other people feel that way too. And so I know that going forward, ONPA is going to do that, and I'm going to do that, and I'm really excited about the future.
Thank you, Josh Bickle, for everything you've done for the ONPA. And thank you, Andrew Dahl, for sharing your vision for ONPA's future. I hope you both have a great COVID-free year. I am your host, Lori King. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Buckeye Visualist. Keep an F2.8 mind, everybody.
You've been listening to the Buckeye Visualist Podcast.